Hi, marhaba, I'm Sha'il, and welcome to another episode of The Najdi Linguist. So this time, I'll talk about a myth that causes some controversy in the field, the linguistic fingerprint. But before I start, I'd like to point out that some of the content is sensitive, so caution is advised. I'll start with a story. Between 1978 and 1995, someone living in the United States, called himself FC, sent a series of bombs, on average once a year, through the post. At first, there seemed to be no pattern, but after several years, the FBI noticed that the victims seemed to be people working in universities and airlines, and so named the unknown individual the Unabomber. The FBI traced 16 bombs that injured 23 victims and killed 3. A newly hired FBI profiler, James Fitzgerald, suggested looking at language evidence since the letters were the only clue. Fitzgerald noticed a phrase used in one of the letters, "Eat your cake and have it too," which is an uncommon version of the more popular phrase, "Have your cake and eat it too." So, when researched, the phrase was found in Chicago newspapers published in the 1930s and 1950s, so this narrowed the search down a little bit. In 1995, six national publications received a 35,000 manuscript entitled Industrial Society and Its Future from someone claiming to be the Unabomber, along with an offer to stop sending bombs if the manuscript were published. In August that year, the Washington Post published the manuscript as a supplement, and 3 months later, a man contacted the FBI with the observation that the document sounded as if it had been written by his brother, whom he hadn't seen for some 10 years. He cited in particular the use of the phrase cool-headed logician as being his brother's terminology, or in our terms, an intellectual preference, which he had noticed and remembered. So the FBI traced and arrested the brother, who was living in a wooden cabin in Montana. They found a series of documents there and performed a linguistic analysis. One of the documents was a 300-word newspaper article of the same topic, written a decade earlier. The FBI analysis claimed major linguistic similarities between the 35,000 and the 300-word documents. So they shared a series of lexical and grammatical words and fixed phrases, which the FBI argued provided linguistic evidence of common authorship. The theory of the linguistic fingerprint suggests that each human being uses language differently. So the words or linguistic markers we choose and how and when we use them are as unique as our fingerprint. This idea fascinated a number of scholars, a lot of people, as yours truly. When I first considered working on authorship analysis, I actually thought that language is the verbal fingerprint and that each and every person has their own unique way in using it. I remember using the magical term, the linguistic fingerprint, in my PhD proposal, thinking that it is what I will achieve in my dialect to identify and describe the linguistic fingerprints of Najdi authors. Linguists' take on the linguistic fingerprint is that every native speaker has their own distinct version of the language they speak and write, their own idiolect. And the term idiolect comes from a blend of two Greek words. But my understanding of it is idiolect is a blend of individual and dialect. What makes someone's idiolect special, like mine or yours, are the distinctive and idiosyncratic choices that we make. Coulter discussed the notion of distinctiveness and idiosyncrasy to explain his interpretation of the linguistic fingerprint. Every speaker has a large active reservoir, or a bank, of vocabulary built up over the years, and even though there will be similarities in the kinds of words people use, it's the preferences in using them what makes them differ. Coulter explains that maybe there is no one defined linguistic fingerprint, but we learn and know thousands of words, and we select the words that will become part of our language habits. So we create our individual dictionary of words we prefer to use, and that selection and co-selection of words is one way of linguistic fingerprinting. It is formed as a result of merged language style. A person's linguistic fingerprint can be reconstructed from the individual's daily interaction and relate to a variety of self-reported personality characteristics, situational variables, physiological markers. Sometimes things such as blood pressure, cortisol, testosterone, these things all make a difference. In the process of investigation, the emphasis should be on the relative rather than absolute difference between the authors and how investigators can classify their texts. John Olson argues, however, that though the concept of linguistic fingerprinting is attractive to law enforcement agencies, there is so far little hard evidence to support the notion. In other words, to claim a linguistic fingerprint when it comes to law enforcement and investigation work is a little tricky. Another example of the fingerprint was Professor Roger Choi's work on the Devil's Strip case with the police in Illinois. The only lead they had was the criminal's notes demanding money, with an interesting way of writing, like spelling cops with a K instead of a C. Another note says, "Put it in the green trash can on the Devil's Strip at the corner 18th and Carlson." So Choi told the police to look for a well-educated man from Akron, Ohio. The description fit one of the suspects, who later confessed. Choi explained that the phrase "Devil's Strip" is only used in Akron and means the grass between the street and the sidewalk. So these are the idiosyncrasies that Coulthard was talking about that makes people stand out, the kinds of linguistic habits that makes their language use unique. Professor Grant has a different take on the fingerprint. His research concludes that the idiolect, or the fingerprint, is part of a speaker's identity, and that identity is not fixed. It changes as the speaker takes on different roles and different interactions. So it's more fluid, and it's not so much restricted. For example, let's say there's a girl named Noura, and she's a college student. She is also a soccer player who all likes to post her games on social media. And she's a daughter and the youngest between her brothers and sisters. Now, Noura has her own unique dictionary of words, phrases, and style of writing or speaking that she cultivated from all her social experiences. And she uses this dictionary differently based on what identity she's playing: the college student, the soccer player, the daughter, and so on. So the co-selections that Noura makes in each and every interaction is what makes her idiolect unique and one of its kind. This new interpretation of the linguistic fingerprint, not as a product of whatever social or cultural experiences we go through, it considers the different roles we play in the conversations we have and how our language changes based on it. It factors in the different identities we carry and project to others. So far, we've seen the linguistic fingerprint powerful enough to convict those who are guilty. But there are also cases where the fingerprint clears the names of the innocent as well. An example of this is the Innocent Project. It's a nonprofit organization in the United States made to help the wrongfully convicted people clear their names by looking into the prosecution courtroom, questioning to see if they were manipulated into confessing things they didn't do. So, in summary, maybe the linguistic fingerprint does exist, just not as straightforward as it sounds. It's a collection of words, it's a set of phrases that can show who we are, where we're from, among other things. Our language behavior, the fingerprint, is very much like us. It's a representation of us, it's a representation of all the social experiences that we go through in our lives, and so they are just like us, one of a kind. As always, thank you for listening. Please subscribe and share your comments and feedback on Twitter. Until next time.